all tomorrow. And we got Max Blair over here, who I'm sure has some thoughts in all sorts of engineering fields that are quite different when thinking about from the heavenly doctrine. And any of you and anything that you do in your daily lives, I'm sure have a perspective on it that's very, very different when you're thinking about it from the heavenly doctrine. So there's a general answer. I don't know if that's responsive to the question or not. But there's something in it that will cover everything.
Jennifer?
I just for example, I taught voice for a while. I had a way of teaching voice that I used some things from the doctrines.
Yeah.
If you want to ask more, you can ask. Well, just one example is the idea of shunning evils as sins and getting yourself out of the way. If you try to control it, do itself, you are going to mess things up. If you let the Lord flow through, that's just one thing that I work with.
I like that idea, though, that what is contained within these volumes, though, is enough to shine light on all topics that are out there. Eric?
I think that's true. In terms of the question of, I mean, can the 33 volumes contain everything? I think the Second Coming is the internal sense of the Word, of the Old and New Testament. I mean, systematically, he got through Genesis and...
Oh, that's a good point, right?
So I think the last sermon I heard was on a part of the Word that the minister said this, and I checked when I got home, and he was right. There's hardly anything in the writings that addresses
that story.
But he preached on it anyway, from what you can gather about what the internal sense of it is. So I think there's a lot in the internal sense that's not explicitly talked about in the heavenly doctrines, but I think that internal sense is part of the Second Coming.
Did you have something, Eric?
I just wanted to say, the second part of the question is a little more interesting. I think there are principles that will make all human knowledge new that you can apply. And is it sufficient? Is there more we're waiting for? I think enter into the mysteries of faith. There's the reality of spiritual light and wisdom that you can gain from that. Something I mentioned in my presentation is the potential for the reconnection of the heavens and this earth as a sort of a long-term potential for the human race. And so is there potential for us to go into this deeper? Yes. Are we waiting for more revelation to begin that process? No. I think what we have is entirely sufficient for us to really kick off that whole process.
Yeah. Ariel, did you have... Darn, you're not going to contradict me.
Yeah, just in general, that the writings are for understanding the Word, and
that's
the Word is, it has infinite levels of depth that we will never reach, and so that's like an eternal fountain of knowledge.
Yep. Yeah, I really like that point. I wasn't thinking about that myself, that we were talking about the writings, but they really all point back to the Old and New Testament. They are the spiritual sense of that, and now that we've got the writings, we can go back to the Old and New Testament as that source as well. So,
Matt,
Julie?
Can I just... Folks, if you speak up, that will pick up.
Okay.
But I'm watching the amount of volume that I'm getting here on the recording, and it's not enough. I could not hear Eric over there. I even have hearing aids on. And some of us older folks, there's a lot of people here.
Do you want to
get the microphone? So please speak up so we can record.
Does the microphone help?
It does.
No,
does
no.
Anybody want to be a mic holder for us?
I can see it, but it's just, you're talking too soft.
But if they had the microphone talking, could you hear better?
I think so. Maybe.
Let's try that.
Question. Test it.
Julie, go ahead. Be fast, though, with the mic. Come on.
Okay, well, my thought is we don't have a need to add more to the Old Testament or the New Testament. That dispensation of divine truth is complete. Why should it be any different with 33 volumes of the writings, or how many volumes you're saying it's been put into? that was what the Lord gave us. That should be what we consider complete. It doesn't say there's going to be another dispensation of truth.
Yeah, I agree. Allison, we'll come to you, Joe.
I just was going to say that Christians think there are 66 books, and we actually have less books now, actually.
34.
Yeah, we have less books. We have the internal sense, which elaborates on them, but we actually have a smaller canon than most Christians.
Most Christians, good point. Joe?
Well, I think that as we, if we read the word,
speak up, please.
I think as we read the word diligently in order to learn truths, the Old Testament, the New Testament, and those 30 books, all of them, the Lord is going to rearrange things in our mind so that we start perceiving things that perhaps He's going to connect this that we learned once and this that we learned once and give us something new from that. And yes, I think there's sufficient there. I don't think there's going to be any more.
Yeah, I agree. Could I, one thing I would just add is that, and I'm not an expert enough in this to speak on it that wisely, but there are interesting places in the heavenly doctrines where it talks about revelations that have been given to those in Africa. And it's kind of this mysterious phrase. It's not talking about the heavenly doctrines, I don't think. Stephen, you and I were talking about that a little bit. I don't know if you have any words of wisdom on that, but agreeing with what everybody's saying here, there's just some intriguing stuff about, you know, revelations elsewhere and what exactly that means. Go ahead, please. I baited him into it.
Last set of posthumous sort of talks more generally about those, the corresponding spiritual experience passages, talks about angels instructing spirits in the Word, and that the revelations in Africa are coming from the Word via these spiritual teachers.
Interesting.
So still from the Word,
right,
but revelations in Africa. And Jeremy Sims reported some experiences where when he was in Togo, meeting Africans and talking about the doctrines of the new church, and they say, yeah, of course, we know about that.
Nice.
I'll get you next. Just to add to that, I think it was in Derek's presentation, he gave an interesting quote about how in the new church, the possible ideal is that as the church grows and people become more and more spiritual and celestial, there will be a more open communication almost with heaven as time goes on. And not that those would be quite revelations, we wouldn't call them, but, you know, the heavenly doctrines have what we need. But that's sort of an interesting thought to me, too, in relation to this question. It's like, maybe through conversations with angels in the future, we'll come to understand all this stuff even better.
But unlike the most ancient church, we could now fact check the angels.
Exactly.
The heavenly doctrines.
So, Craig, and then let's do one more.
Okay, so I think in the writings, what we have given to us is plenty for us to, you know, guide us through leading a good life and lead to heaven and so forth and so on. But sort of related to this, I've often wondered, okay, suppose the writings were given 10 or 12 years ago, something like that. What would be in them that would be different? I think that revelation is accommodated to the age it's given in. So those of us who are kind of scientifically interested, often look and see what kind of science there is in the writings, and it reflects its times, and it should. We're not going to find quantum physics in the writings, because if it was, I think that would really abridge our freedom significantly to have some science come in there 300 years ahead of its time when it really didn't exist at that point. But at the same time, I think. Some of us would be more interested, would like to know how things, you know, we talk about the relationship between the spiritual world and the natural world being, say, one of correspondence. But we kind of like to know the mechanics of that a little bit. We kind of like to be interested in, you know, well, how does it really work? And I think our minds often go in that direction if we're so inclined to do that. Now, there are some people in the church who believe, and I think some in this room, who think that we can by studying the writings really hard and studying modern science, we can pull together, can pull the spiritual world and the natural world together more closely from a descriptive point of view. And I don't know whether that's possible or not. I think at some point we step on human freedom doing that. But I really would love to know what the writings would look like if they were given 10 years ago.
Interesting.
Thank you.
Derek, did someone back here? No? Okay, John, and then let's move on to a new question.
I think the writings are what we've been given, and the only restriction is our own comprehension of it, and that's where there can be more as we understand it, because we're just human. And I think Swedenborg has even said that, well, there's more to this, but you're too stupid to understand.
Pretty stupid. Yeah, Kurt, and then let's move on.
I keep in mind that truth is the form of good, and that the whole purpose of the Lord making truth known to us is so that we may know what is good. And he came and comes each time so that we may once again have a clear grasp of what it is to be good, to be truly human, and that in the heavenly doctrines that he has given in this, his second coming, the description of what is good cannot be more perfectly done than it has been done, and for me at any rate, and I cannot conceive of it being done in a more perfect form than it is.
Yeah, I agree. I like that. That's like maybe a good way to end this question, that connection
yes.
of truth with good. You know, this isn't just about, you know, more books to give us more ideas, but it's as we use these ideas to live a life of love to the Lord and charity to the neighbor that these very ideas will enlighten our minds even more. It's almost like a continual loop. So, okay, let's move on to another question here.
Time for two more questions.
Yeah, well, and that's fine. I have no need to get through all these questions. So Brad, since you spoke up, you could have, should have kept your mouth shut. Okay, I've got a question for Brad here. Part of this question I added to, but you can guess which part it was. So Brad, you apparently want to build a big, beautiful, huge wall around your church. What, now for the serious part of the question, what do appropriate
wall... get the old church to pay for it.
Willingly.
So Brad, this is in part asked, I think, because I don't know what the second presentation he gave was like, but he didn't get a chance to talk to that much. So a good question, though, is, so what do appropriate walls look like in the church? You know, and there are some other questions that kind of feed off from that. But in general, so what, on a very practical level, what does it look like in a church organization, maybe in your own personal life, to have these protective walls to the holy city? And maybe I'll put you on the spot, Brad, if you want to just start with a couple ideas on that.
Yeah, I hope I don't become known as the wall guy. Could be worse things. No, I think it's really important. To me, the whole purpose of walls is one, to define a space, and to create an environment that is different from the environment outside. And so to me, in the picture I have of the holy city is, yeah, the doors are open. We want people to come in, but we also want people to know what the rules of that community are. And to me, not that everybody is perfect who's maybe already in the walls, but the idea that we all admit that these are the rules by which we believe we should live, and we're going to help each other do that. And I think that creates a distinctive environment
And no, you don't want to let people in who say, I don't agree with that commandment, or I don't agree with this truth revealed by the Lord. I want you to change that to something. Then I say, no, then that might be another city outside Gomorrah or something that you can be over there. But there, you've got to have something that sets you apart. And I believe that allows the people inside the city to live safely and happily. And hopefully, if it's done with charity, the people outside the wall might be looking inside and say, oh, the people in there seem happy and joyous all the time. Wouldn't it be great to want to go be a part of that city environment that they're living in? And so you invite them in, they're clear as to what the rules are and that everybody there is trying to help each other do that, and that's what I think walls are for. And in the case where somebody is hostile, then yeah, you defend yourself.
Derek
Rich.
I think it's the thought, I think it's an important differentiation between the walls of the New Jerusalem and the walls of the general church. As an organization, setting up those rules, I think, you know, that's the organizational rule set. But the sort of the gates and walls of the New Jerusalem, that's, that job is the Lord's job to set those and sort of be the gatekeeper for that religion. So I think it's important to make sure we differentiate between the walls in our organization and walls that we may perceive in the new church. Because I think a gray area gets formed sometimes.
Good point. Becca?
I have maybe a similar thought to Derek's, but one thing that was on my mind was, what do you do when, as a human organization, you say, here are the walls, and you know, maybe it's a trapezoid or something, and somebody else says, actually, I think by reading the word, it's really a rhombus, and then what do you do with the, what's different? When what's the same might be 85%, and what's different might be 15%.
Thoughts on this?
Yes, you have to answer one of you guys.
Derek?
I think these are all really good questions, and one of the things I want to generally push back on is I hear a lot of times people idealizing the new church apart from the organizational church, and I want to say a comparison I like to do is, can you love marriage apart from your marriage? Yes and no. If you're not working on your marriage, you don't actually love marriage. And so we need to be working on this organization as the place where we get to express the new church values according to our best understanding. And, you know, I don't know what we do if we, you know, 15% disagreement about stuff, but, you know, we have to believe in this organization as the best instantiation of what we can do to bring that spiritual reality into this world. And not try to drive too big a wedge between it. Yes, there is this spiritual reality that's apart from it, but we can also get caught up in these, like, Platonic forms of the ideal, and then this organization is garbage. And you can also get caught up in, we've got to make this organization perfect, and too much focused on that. And I think there's a tension between those two things, the spiritual reality of what the new church is in its sort of ideal, and then the organizational reality of, we're making decisions based on our best understanding, and how do we hold that in a way that allows us to continue to develop and grow in understanding, but also have the boundaries we need to be a healthy organization.
Yeah. And then to respond back to your question, I think there are passages which refer to differences in the church. And as I understand it, the only time that there's a reaction that's necessary is if a disturbance is created. So you could have a lot more than 15 to 20% variation within one's understanding of the word, and I think there is that. But the at least as far as the clergy is concerned, from the passages I'm aware of, the only time the Lord says there's anything we should do about it is if there's a disturbance that comes from it. So all sorts of variety and even some divergent ideas can exist within the same organization, but when they begin to cause a disturbance, that's when we have to look at how to respond to it. I think that's maybe a little bit more directly responsive to your question.
And just using that analogy a little, one of the things that I love about the vision of the Holy City is it is a boring box that is four square. And it says that's because everything in the new church is supposed to be in equal parts love, wisdom, reflected in use. That's the length, breadth, and height of the city. So I wouldn't want a rhomboid or a trapezoid. A nice, simple box. And I think where we are stressed, I think, is when those things aren't in balance. You know, when all somebody is hearing maybe is a truth apart from any love or good attached to it, there's a tension. I think when people, you know, are just well-intentioned and gushy, good-feeling, and there's no wisdom attached to it, there's a tension. And particularly when you don't see it manifested in the life of the church in use, then I think everybody begins to question, is it working? So let's go for a box.
Yes. A box. All right. Anything else on that? One thought, brief thought I have on that is that, you know, when you're talking about walls like this, it is, and we should at times, it's very easy to slip into a thought process and a conversation, and of course, about us being in the city and how do we keep other people out. Well, maybe this goes to Derek's point a little bit that, you know, obviously the question is most important to address to yourself, right? Yeah. You know, what is it within me, my own thoughts and evil loves, maybe going back to Calvin's talk this morning about throwing the stuff out of my mind that's keeping me out of this city. And I just think that's important to keep in mind. It's so easy with topics like that to go immediately to, this is about us and other people out there that we're keeping out, or et cetera, et cetera. So Joe and then Vance, maybe?
Well, I think an example, I don't live in Brenhafen. I live far away from Brenhafen, but I understand that Brenhafen, the academy, the church, maybe all together, shortly, a little while ago, did erect a wall. And that is that the federal government was requiring, if we rent out Cairnwood to people who want to have wedding receptions, we have to rent them out to anybody who wants a wedding reception. And we did not want to rent them out for a wedding reception for a gay marriage. And so we built the wall by saying, okay, we don't rent it out for wedding receptions anymore, which is, I think, a sad overall effect, but there's a wall that was erected. Was it a good wall? Some people might have different answers to that, but the answer in Brenhafen was yes, it was a good wall.
Right, one more on this, Vance, and then we'll move on.
I think it wasn't the reception that was ruled out, it was the wedding.
Yes.
They still sell receptions. But anyway, that's the wall I hadn't thought about. But my problem is, I think we have too many walls. And if we don't start breaking them down, we're never going to grow. One of them, for example, is we have no identity that tells anything about what we're all about. New Church doesn't do it. Another thing is we don't have a program to systematically teach all these people how to talk with people out of the church. We're the only people, whenever anything comes up, we always say, we'll get the pastor to tell them. And we're not going to grow if we don't have enough pastors. If we had 20, 30,000 pastors, we'd grow. So the answer is get all of us to be able to do the recruiting now. There are all kinds of walls. I don't want to tie up time, but I could go up 15 things like that that are keeping us from growing. And our job really is not for the ministers to tell us how to regenerate. Their job is to tell us how to read the writing so we can figure out how to regenerate.
That's another wall. Julie?
Real quick, if you had no walls, you couldn't have any doors. But if you have all walls, you can't have any doors. We have to hit the balance between having some walls and having some doors.
About 12 doors.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, this is a great conversation.
This
is a great conversation. We could talk about this for so much longer. It's fascinating to me, like, when does a wall become something bad and when is it something good? Another analogy I like to use, the writings themselves use it, is to think about the human body in terms of the positive side to walls. And, you know, all of your boundaries, right? Organs need boundaries. If you didn't have boundaries to contain each organ as its own separate identifiable unit, your body couldn't function as a whole.
You would be an amoeba.
You'd be an amoeba. Think about the another...
Which has a wall.
Which has a wall.
Yeah, one
wall. Another great example of walls, I think, in a good way, again, using the analogy maybe of boundaries, is, of course, the Holy City. And the great part about all the different boundaries to the tribes that were set up and the boundaries to the Jordan, you know, boundaries are important. If you don't have boundaries on some level, you don't have any life, and you don't, even in heaven, right? There are boundaries separating societies according to the different loves. And if you didn't have those boundaries, nothing could get done that was actually useful. But again, back to Vance's point, when do those boundaries hinder rather than help?
The Ten Commandments are boundaries.
Ten Commandments are boundaries, right? Yeah, and I loved that Brad, I think I loved Brad's point this morning that fascinating image that this holy city has a wall, but and the gates are always open. It's a really interesting image I hadn't really thought about before. Like it's a wall, and yet 12 gates, and they're always open. And angels to guard them. So it kind of goes back and forth. So if you've got a wall, but 12 gates that are always open, how effective is that wall? Right? But it's got that wall.
One more.
Yeah, Brett, one more.
I think the internal sense, or one aspect of it, of the walls is protective truths. And it's frustrating because the Lord says protective truths and just doesn't give us an exhaustive list of what those protective truths are. But if we're thinking about it from the internal sense, it is truths that protect what's within it. And I think the Ten Commandments is probably a set of those protective truths. And it is interesting to think about which commandments are being challenged the most right now within our general church culture. Because in my mind, certainly the Sixth Commandment is getting challenged in a lot of different ways. And if we let down the bricks in the wall, whatever it is that makes up the wall, whatever analogy you want to use for the building blocks, let the ones that are based on the Sixth Commandment against adultery crumble down, then the church as standing for truths that teach us how to love each other is infiltrated. And I'm not making this about person, about individual people, but these ideas that save us are no longer useful anymore. So it's interesting to think about where some holes might be developing in the wall or where the attacks are coming from in reference to the Ten Commandments, not from individual people. It hells just doing whatever they can, wherever they can. But the Sixth Commandment really seems like a big one. And you know, maybe we all have direct connections with it. Probably all of us do. But how many people have said to you, or have you heard within the general church say that homosexuality is not adultery? And it's clearly said in the heavenly doctrine that it is. So when we think of the protective truths of the Ten Commandments, when we begin to get into obscurity around some of those, then I think we can understand a little bit better what a wall does. The new church stands for living the Ten Commandments, but if it doesn't stand for one of the commandments, then is the wall serving any kind of function? Both protecting people inside of it, and once somebody comes in, protecting them as well. So that's just one. I'm trying to think of it in a little bit more of a tangible way.
That's good. It suddenly strikes me too, I gave worship on this show, I should have remembered it, but you know, interesting that those gates again were made of one pearl, which is that doctrine of the Lord, and it's that doctrine of the Lord that introduces a person into the church, and you know what, how that ties into the conversation of the walls is interesting. Okay, Brian in the back.
Hi, begin with perhaps an aside, but just thinking of who's outside the wall, the Revelation 22 that mentions the list of outside are dogs, sorcerers, sexually immoral, murderers, idolaters, and whoever loves and practices a lie. So that covers a lot of the Ten Commandments. So it's just interesting to hear that list of who the walls are keeping out, perhaps. So I guess my question is back to thinking of the general church organization. In heaven, in the spiritual world, there's a great chasm between heaven and hell. It's all, the whole thing is ruled by the Lord. It's all separated and divided such that everything can be kept in maximum order. But even within heaven, there are groups that are so divergent that they cannot even see each other or communicate directly to each other. It's just wildly different, you know, in terms of how far the communities in heaven are and how little they can be around each other. And that's amazing to me. And so I'm wondering, how do you picture what the general church organization is trying to do? How much should be brought within that tent? You know, what's the unit size of a church organization? Is it healthier for us to think of the church specific, you know, the Lord's new church instantiated on earth as counting on it to be larger than the general church organization or whatever organization we find ourselves part of? Should we get in the way of thinking about there's the church universal and then there's the church specific, which includes multiple organizations, or do we picture that our organization is ought to encompass anyhow? So how big a unit is healthy to work with before we are separated?
But boy, you're not going to answer that.
This is your chair, Brian.
Yeah, Brian.
My current experience is the local congregations and the organization as a whole are smaller than I think I would like them to be to do the things I'd like the organization to do. So my impression is we could be a lot bigger because there are things that I think a healthy organization could and should do. But I also think, going back to Brad's presentation, the focus on the size is the wrong thing. We have to start with being before we can get to that organizational structure and numbers and whatever. If we're on fire about this stuff, you know, growth is going to be a secondary byproduct. Like, you know, health produces growth, and we're focusing on the growth to try to be healthy. That's backwards. We've got to be the church, be on fire about this, love this stuff, live it out, love the Lord, love the neighbor. If we have that marriage of all those things in love, wisdom, and use, the growth byproduct and the size and the organizational structure, I think all those are like external stuff compared with those other things.
Jennifer? There keeps being one more, which is fine.
I can't decide if this is a stupid question or not, but talking about sizes of things and the growth of the grand man and the crown of all churches is the heart and lungs, and we are reaching out to the Church Universal, which is the rest of the grand man. But you don't change elbows into heart and lungs or things like that. That's what I'm asking about. We want more people to be part of the heart and lungs. The heart and lungs need to be stronger and bigger to be able to serve the grand man as the grand man grows. So are these new heart and lungs people coming from the Gentiles, or how does that work?
Good fusion.
So this one is complicated, but I do think if you think in terms of function, we had a little sidebar somewhere after one of the sessions, and it was pointed out that even in the cell, each individual cell has, as it were, an engine, a heart that pumps and stuff. So, you know, I do think in wherever you are, there's always going to be an internal, there's always going to be an external. In whatever capacity, there's always going to be the functions of the body contained within it. Each cell has its flushing system, its garbage disposal. All those things are in there. So again, to me, I just think if we think broadly in terms of function, why we're here, what can we do to try and perform this unique use that the Lord has plopped us in the middle of, we'll be okay. And whether we're sort of like a heart cell in the elbow cell or actually a heart cell in the heart, it'll work out.
All right. Well, we got, go ahead, please. Yep, 15 minutes.
Sort of following on, Brad, on your talk this morning, you left blank what could be the downfall of the new church. I thought the west window of the cathedral addressed that in the picture. Is there, what, I thought it was in the writing somewhere that we could fall. We have things that are weaknesses. And
West window? Anybody knowledge on what that is?
Here's the mic. Briefly,
the west window of the cathedral has the five churches represented by figures. At the top of the window, in little pictures, are the height of the church. Below is the fall of the church. So, for example, like there's the golden calf and things like that. There is no fall of the new church. Below, the woman clothed with the sun is the Lord on a horse with a two-edged sword. So there is no fall depicted in that window that I'm aware of. So,
well, it depends on, I think, who you mean by we could fall.
If we are the church.
Could we in this room fall? Absolutely.
Yes.
Could the general church fall? Absolutely. But then I tie that into all the other teachings that, you know, talk about the Lord and his providence. They'll always make sure that somewhere. So if we fall, my understanding is that in providence, I trust that the Lord would raise up another group somewhere.
Is there something specific we're susceptible to?
I think it's the same. It's the dragon. Faith alone. I mean,
okay.
Same thing that caused the Christian church to fall in the first place, I think. But sorry?
Yes, pride of self-intelligence, worship of self.
Oh man, you got Brad to open up his packet. All right, Derek, for real one more, then we're going to move on to one other question.
I was right, we'll get to two.
Oh no, I need to hear him, please, Anita. Anita, excuse me.
Changing your mind.
I'm sorry, I didn't see you. Wave if you don't think I'm seeing you. Jump up and down. Sorry, Derek, yes.
Next topic, women are supposed to be quiet. Sorry, just an interesting note from Brad's presentation today. Looking at your dates of, and you know, they were rough dates from hundreds of thousands of years to thousands of years, but Not to set complacency in, but remember that things happen in thousands of years. And it's very easy for us in our finite sense to think, oh my gosh, this isn't happening in 100 years, or 200 years, or 300 years. This could fall, rises and falls of hundreds of more general churches out there, or church conventions, or whatever, 5,000 years down the road. It's going to be a long journey, and I think that's important for us to remember. And again, not to be complacent about it, just to say, well, it's going to happen eventually. But the God is working in the billions of years across the universe. So just keep that in mind.
I think it's a little bit of a futile attempt to do, but I know some people have, you know, the story of the woman clothed with the sun, she gives birth to the male child. And then the story continues, right? She's then given wings. She lives in the wilderness for a while. People have tried to map out, well, where are we in that story right now? You know, the male child's been born, I suppose. The writings have been given. But are we in the wilderness somewhere? Is there still a lot of fighting with the dragon to do? Yes. And again, not just out there in ourselves, to your point. It's our fight as well. So, Anina King. Yes, what would you like to say? Hello.
Well, we kind of moved on from this, that's why I was saying.
That's okay. Totally.
Just thinking about the thing of walls, that it sort of has an uncomfortable sound to think about walls when it sounds like what you were saying, you know, us versus them, like we're somehow inside this wall and we're keeping everyone out. But then I was just thinking that idea of protective truths, that this is not to protect us, it's to protect the Lord's country, the Lord's city, if you will, that the idea that we're on the outside too, and those truths are protecting, you know, all those things that the Lord has inside there. It's not us on the inside, someone on the outside. And I was just thinking about when you visit someone else's city or country, you learn about their customs. Those are walls. You learn, what do they believe? How do they speak here? That's a barrier, a wall, if you will. How do you go visit there and learn what they have, and so that you can go there and learn from them and be part of that and decide if you're part of that place, and you can be there and dwell there. And so it's just thinking about walls in that more friendly sense of protection too. Another way to look at it.
Good point. All right, we've got about 10 minutes left. I mean, maybe I should quickly switch, you know, to a few lighter topics here. But I don't see any. You know, last time we did this and people had some really good, just kind of pithy, like, can angels fly? And of course they can fly. Questions like that. Will you see your pet in heaven? I was ready to answer no until my father-in-law scolded me and said, of course you'll see your pet in heaven. Ask him about it. He's got a good point. So, I don't see any of those on this list, but here, maybe just to change, you know, venues here, not venues, change directions here a little bit. Let me do something here. So, without thinking about it too much, we're not a thinking church. I'm going to ask a question, and I want you to just raise your hand right away if you think the answer is as I indicate. I'll be interested about this. So, is the new church, think to Brad's charts from this morning, is the new church a celestial church? Raise your hand if you think the answer is yes.
The what church?
Is the new church a celestial church?
I guess
raise your hand if you think the answer is yes. I'm going to hold off so you can't copy me.
Is the new church a celestial
church? So one of the questions we got was, is the new church a celestial church? And kind of following off from that, is the new church, hard to use words like this, but better than the most ancient church? Like if you had to put them next to each other.
Oh, yeah.
Well, again, you think of one answer to that question, I'll just kick things off here, is, you know, think of Brett's chart of kind of infancy to adulthood.
Yeah.
And sometimes people look at that most ancient church as that infantile state, and so the innocence of ignorance, as it were, versus the innocence of wisdom. And the writings clearly teach that the innocence of wisdom is that ideal. But I've always, it's kind of a bit of a pet peeve of mine, I should warn you, this idea of the new church being celestial. And I think the answer is absolutely yes. I don't think there's any doubt in my own mind that it is, depending maybe, Vance, you spoke up there, and how you define celestial. We will not be celestial like the people of the most ancient church were. You know, there's a different genius involved. But if you think of celestial as being a state of love to the Lord, a church that puts love to the Lord above all things, the city's gold, it's a bride adorned for her husband. Everything I read really points to this understanding. I think this ties into Brad's point about how special this church is. I define the new church easily in my own mind as being a celestial church. But I'm happy to have people argue with me about that. So does anyone want to speak to that? Again, we've only got about 7 minutes, so... Well, a spiritual church, I think people might think, no, it's a spiritual church, because only the most ancient church was celestial. And I get why they say that, but...
I couldn't raise my hand right away, because I think there's a confusion between, you might say, us personally, and where we are, and where the new church will be.
Interesting, yeah.
Because I think we're in the infant stage right now,
and the new church.
The celestial church will be full of wisdom, and that means there has to be a progression towards that, and I think we're tiny, tiny at the very beginning. We really don't know how this can grow in terms of wisdom. So I look at myself as being very ignorant on this kind of thing, but I think someday the church will reach that.
I guess the lady with the mic gets to speak whenever she wants.
She hasn't spoken yet.
Yeah. I haven't spoken yet. Go to your room. I agree that the Lord's new church is celestial. Absolutely, as somebody back here said, how could it be anything else? The general church of the New Jerusalem? Far from it. But we at least know where we want to go. So the closer we get, maybe we'll become from natural to spiritual to celestial. It's not, and hopefully as people then we can fill the celestial heavens, but certainly the Lord's church in and of itself on a spiritual level is celestial. The rest of us have a long way to go, and we should be trying every minute to make our church take another step higher and another step, which is why the protective walls, I guess. Can I let you know?
Yes.
Talking about walls, I mean, you mean if we only attain to the level of a natural angel, we really weren't new church? Or if we only attain to the level of a spiritual heaven, we really weren't in the church, didn't understand it for some reason? I think the church in itself, like you just said, don't remember your name, Elsa. Yeah, I've known her for years.
I know.
It's silver hair thing. But I think to say, is it a celestial church at this point?
Yes.
There are a lot of people in it that aren't in the celestial church, or may not be destined for the celestial heaven.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Yeah. You'll know, yeah. Can I just say one thing real quick, because people, if you're in my congregation ever, you'll know, this will come up. I joke with people, and it is tongue-in-cheek. I tell people, if they only make it to the natural heaven, you failed. But I kind of do mean it. I have a guy in my congregation who I finally convinced. He comes up to me now, and he says, Matthew, okay, fine, you've convinced me. I'm going to try for the spiritual heaven. So I'm halfway there. I'm hoping in another year we'll try for the celestial.
Yeah, I think a couple of things on this. One, there are passages that talk about the new church being a spiritual church. And the distinction that I think is useful to see is that in terms of how we approach the Lord, every church after the most ancient church has been a spiritual church, meaning that their route back to the Lord is through the truth.
Yeah.
So in that sense, the new church is a spiritual church, as was the ancient church and all those. So our route back now is not going to be through native perception. It is always going to be through the revealed truth from the Lord. So in that sense, we're spiritual. As to, I think you have to go macrocosm to microcosm. In the grand scheme of things, I think the new church, yes, is supposed to return to a state of love to the Lord and be that celestial church with the innocence of wisdom. And each of those churches has had its own cycle of growth from infancy to maturity. So, yeah, the beginnings of the new church here, where are we? That's a fun game to play.
I'm on the panel, so I'm going to steal the mic.
Okay, go ahead.
Just thinking from the scriptures, I think the 12 tribes listed are the qualities of all the people who are going to be in the church and all the truths that are possible, and its leading quality is Judah, which is the celestial. And then the city itself is a golden city. City is doctrine, which would be spiritual, but it's golden, which is celestial. So it'll have a spiritual origin into the celestial axis. And I also think that we really overcomplicate what the celestial is.
Yeah.
The celestial is, you do it because the Lord said so. If that's your reason for doing it, that's the celestial. It's not really that complicated. I think we abstract it and make it about all these emotional things. But if you do it because the Lord said so, you'll eventually love to do it, and you'll eventually love the Lord. And that's really can be that simple.
Yeah. Let's go, Max. Okay, yeah. We'll do three more here, and then so maybe no more hands because we got 1 minute. So.
Well, reading the writings always comes back new to me. You know, like, did I really read this book? And recently, reading through the Arcana, our group, about the Garden of Eden and the flames which protect the Garden of Eden kind of thing. And I'm sitting there saying, wow, how are you going to get through the flames and all that stuff? And then just come to read and realize it's me that keeps me from getting into the Garden of Eden. And if I actually achieve that, and it is a very scary thought for me, no kidding, kind of thing, to, wow, once in a while I don't think I can do that because it just scares me to have that much love kind of thing. If I got into the Garden of Eden, I'm not going to be worried about the walls, you know. I have walls, what walls, you know, kind of thing. It's the Lord's taking care of the whole thing. That's just what came to my mind on the Celestial Church. Thank you.
That's a neat thought, actually. The more you're in the city, the less those walls you really even notice them, probably.
Somebody asked this morning, you know, what is the church? Is it gold? Is it silver? Is it whatever? And one thing I didn't hear that came to mind is it's a crown. So it's a golden crown, and it's holding up those gems. So it's both a spiritual and a celestial church. And that image is so beautiful because that gold keeps those gems from rubbing together and hurting each other. They're held so that they shine. And I just love that image of the crown.
And thinking in the model of the church specific, one of the things it says is that the heart function is the celestial function, and the lung function is the spiritual function. So,
yeah, both, yep. Kurt, and then Stephen, you're gonna close us off, so make sure it's good.
Well, Matt, I would say that the new church used to be a celestial church back in the 17th. In Swedenborg's day, because then they spoke Latin, you know, and celestial meant heavenly. Yeah. But today, we speak English, and celestial simply means heavenly. So I think today the new church is a heavenly church. And I'd say today we're a heavenly church, yeah, not a celestial church.
I like that.
Interesting. Go, Stephen. Go.
I don't know if this is jumping back to earlier, but it's come up again, and I wanted to join Derek in his pushback on there's the new church, some sort of platonic ideal, and then there's the general, the poor, pathetic, natural general church. And obviously, they are not completely coextensive. There are people who are of the Lord's church, specifically, who aren't members of the general church, and vice versa. But honestly, if the church specific is where the Lord is known through his word and a life is lived according to that, there just aren't many other games in town. There aren't many other people out there who have the doctrines and who are trying to live their lives according to other than, at this day, the general church of the New Jerusalem. So I just want to endorse that pushback.
All right. Well, I apologize that we have to receive. Okay. I apologize if you're sitting in the audience saying you didn't get to my question. Because I'm looking at you right there. Either of yours.
But they were good questions.
They were good questions. So you can see we got to about four questions. This is always fun to me, but I hope it was just sort of a fun hour to touch on some of these things. But thank you to you guys for sitting up here and taking the heat. And what's next, Julie? Dinner at 5:30?
Dinner at 5:30.
Great. Thank you all very much.